Island started to look at how can we balance, do a better job of balancing our long-term care services and look to Oregon as our model, one of our models. So why do we look to Oregon to begin with? And what I am focusing on is pertinent to the last question about how, not necessarily how do we focus on acute care, but how do we balance the dollars we spend in institutions for long-term care with providing care within the community, in home and community-based services. And the reason we look to Oregon is because of their historical leadership in providing services since the 1970s. They've taken a look at how can we best meet our needs in the community as well as in nursing homes. So we're going to look a little bit at some demographics and some of the key elements that Oregon did to institute their services for long-term care, pick out a little bit for what other states can look for in their reform efforts, and what Oregon is looking at for the future of their long-term care services. And why is it important? Most states primarily provide long-term care services in institutions, in nursing homes, and those are costly services. And change is driven, as I'm sure you can imagine, by a variety of factors. The demographics, the changing demographics of the elderly population, the high cost, consumers are demanding choice, they'd like to be served more in the community, the states are trying to balance their budgets and spend their dollars wisely, and also in 1999 there was a Supreme Court decision called the Olmstead decision that said that we need to provide our services for people in the least restrictive setting and challenge states to develop plans to make that happen. So very quickly on the demographics, what I want to show you a little bit is that Oregon is not much different from the United States overall. So if you look at the population 65 and over, it's expected to double by the year 2030. And if you look specifically at the 85 and older, that population in this country will more than double, and typically the 85 and older are the ones more likely to take advantage or need these long-term care services. Oregon's population growth is just a little bit different, but the same trend occurs, that the 65 and older population will double as the 85 and over population will as well. As far as what percentage of the population is, it's not as robust as it is in Japan, as we just saw, but right in 2000, the 65 and older was 12.4% of our population, and that's going to grow to 19.7, and Oregon is a little bit behind that with 18.2 by 2030, but the growth is still impressive. Turning to the second reason that we besides the demographics, the second reason we look for why do we want to change and do a better job of balancing the services is from a cost perspective. In Medicaid-funded nursing home services cost $18,123 per person served in Oregon, and the home and community-based services were almost $12,000. But looking at this from a pie perspective, in the U.S., for the population of adults with disabilities, that's the adults with disabilities, which includes the disabled adult population. So this is not just focusing on the 65 and older, but this is 71.4% of our dollars are spent in institutions and 28% In Oregon, the green pie is much bigger, with 55% and 45% spent, 55% in the community and 45% spent in institutions. Oops. That's just another way to look at them side by side. So what is it that, just a very brief background, as I said, in the mid-70s, the Oregon had state leadership by Richard Ladd that developed a vision that we would like to have our services, we would like our elders to have independence, dignity, quality of life, and choice. And the AAAs themselves, the service providers within the state, became advocates and became involved in designing the programs. In 1977, they created a program called Oregon Project Independence, which was focused on preventing people who were close to being Medicaid eligible from going on the Medicaid rolls by being able to provide them with some state-funded supports. And in 1981, they created the Senior and Disabled Services Division, where they brought together services from federally funded and state-funded programs into one organization. So specifically, what did they do? What makes Oregon a little bit different from some of our other states is, from a state perspective, how they administer their programs. Funding, implementation, and regulation are all housed in one agency. Everyone is accountable to the same agency. And from the consumer perspective, program access and service delivery is also found in one place. So they typically go to their AAAs for information on community-based services and nursing home services and all their long-term care services. So a little bit more about that access. In the way that other states have also adopted these methods, as we call it, a single entry point, where information, assessment, eligibility determination, it's all handled in one place. And the person can go to one person who will transition them from their intake, from whether they're eligible or not, into a care planning mode. The second thing from Access that makes Oregon unique is that they're entitled to home and community-based services. So once they're determined to be eligible, they can choose whether they require nursing home services or they desire nursing home services for themselves or to be served in the community, where most of our states who have home and community-based programs have waiver programs, and they have limited numbers of people they can serve in those programs. And for the consumer choice in the 70s, from the 70s forward, they started to develop an infrastructure of housing, different kinds of housing, where they could provide long-term care services, such as assisted living and adult foster care homes. Another thing that they did was smart use of technology in how they were able to manage their caseloads. And they have a system called CAPS, I forget what the whole acronym is, but it goes from the A and the P goes from assessment to planning. So the information is gathered, and once they're determined to be eligible, they're put into a category, one of 17 categories based on their needs. They call them survival levels. And being able to access that information helps them manage the costs based on that survival level. And the other key thing they did was put in have a prevention focus that said, well, how can we keep people from joining the Medicaid rolls to begin with if we can provide them some supports in the community? So that was another one of their key elements. They took many legislative actions to make this happen over the years, but two of them stand out, and that is, the first one was in 1981 when they combined their services into one agency. And what that did for them was it allowed them to have money flow for where the services were going to be delivered, rather than having in-state budget discussions, which sometimes I emphasize these points because this seems to be what happens in Rhode Island, where I live, is that the home and community-based services are housed in one agency, nursing home services in another agency, and people tend to try to protect their programs rather than to provide the services in the best setting. So in 1981, Oregon did away with that and allowed the money that was allotted to a person who was eligible for services to be able to flow from nursing home to home and community-based if that was what their need if that was what their need and desire allowed. And under that organization of services, when they did, Oregon's not perfect, they have run into some tough times, and when they needed to do some budget cutting on how to provide services, they would look at budget cuts from the point of view of the person in the least level of need, rather than cutting entire programs or blocking programs. And the other thing they did in 1985 was pass the Nurse Delegation Act, which allowed them to provide services in these alternate residential settings that they set up, assisted living and the adult foster care services, by having nurses involved in the process and oversight and in care planning. The programs that they do offer, the biggest program within Oregon is the Medicaid Home and Community-Based Service Waiver Program of residential support in these residential settings. And I did have some numbers of the people they serve. They serve 27,300 people in these settings. So that's in assisted living and the adult foster care program. They've also been in their OPI, Oregon Project Independence, of trying to keep people in the community and not jumping to the Medicaid roles. It's about 2,000 people. They are involved in a couple of other demonstration type programs where they've have an Oregon spousal pay program where in the community they're under certain needs a spouse can be paid for taking care of their partner if their medical needs are at a certain eligibility level. And Independent Choices is another, it's a Medicaid eligible consumer directed program that they've recently gotten involved in. And those serve fewer people right now, but they're growing. So there are only 190 people in this spouse pay program and 70 in cash and counseling. And Client Empowered Program is another way of Oregon saying it's a consumer-directed program where the client can hire their own caregiver under Medicaid funds, as long as it's not the spouse in this particular program. And that serves almost 6,000 people. So just a brief financial picture of how Oregon fares here. 16.4% of people 65 and older in the U.S. are on Medicaid, and in Oregon it's close to 11%. And looking at poverty rates, Oregon is not much different from the country as a whole in their level of poverty. I think my numbers didn't come out quite right on this chart. I apologize. But for the Medicaid payments per enrollee 65 and older, in the U.S., the U.S. spends an average of $11,000, almost $500 per Medicaid enrollee over 65, and Oregon spends less than that at about $10,500. So what can other states take away from what Oregon has done? In the early days, they had a primary focus. They said, how can we increase our home and community-based services, which allowed them to focus on increasing the infrastructure and the things they needed to do that, and to offer consumers choices. They had one agency. The one agency allowed for cohesive policy decisions to happen and financial decisions to happen. When they were doing this, they involved the stakeholders in their planning process for how services should be delivered. They have also created a dispute resolution process because not all stakeholders have the same goals, and so that they didn't get bogged down in discussions about what was going to happen, and to be able to move the whole process forward, they created a dispute resolution process. And of course, primary, they involve the providers and the service delivery. And I'll jump to that for a minute because it struck me as a contrast to Japan, where Oregon has provided, in the early days, they provided outreach and education for the doctors who, of course, are very focused on the medical model of nursing home care and how, so they involve doctors in the education of what could be the benefits of home and community-based services. And they got nursing homes involved, nursing home owners involved in thinking about diversifying their businesses, and nursing home owners then developed assisted livings and were less contentious in the discussions about how to provide the services. The other thing that states can take away is to develop a continuum of care within a community that fosters inclusion of the nursing homes. The nursing homes are not the enemy here. They're part of the planning process, and they provide a valuable service that people can flow to and from the community. And I said they weren't perfect. They've had some challenges. They've had to take some budget cuts that weren't popular, and another challenge they've had is keeping up the quality in their foster care system. And just a very quick look at their future outlook. They're faced with the same demographics as others. They've developed a planning process in 2005 to address how do we go forward, what do our long-term care systems need to be in the future. And they've came up with 7 questions that they want to focus on, and I'll just focus on one of them that they haven't moved very far forward in integrating acute care into their long-term care system. Some residents in Oregon are skeptical about how well that would work, but that's on the table for what do we do in the future. Thank you. No, Rhode Island isn't. Rhode Island really hasn't stepped forward for its elderly population. We still spend 90% of our dollars in nursing homes and 10% in community. We've done a lot of talking, and right now the reason I put this together was there's still more talking. Now there's talk about a better way to integrate throughout the state, but I think it'll be a while before we move forward on what you said, where how can we get the surveyors, how can we have the regulation process be a little less contentious and maybe a little bit more nurturing for the nursing homes.
Would you please state your name, where you're from, please?
So
Thank you. Thank you. I'm sorry, Susan, we're going to have to move on. I just want to make one comment, two comments about Oregon. I think what Kathy said at the end is one of the, I've been looking for outcomes in this, and there have been no outcomes, except Kathy did mention that the one outcome is a financial outcome that people use as a measure, and that's the proportion of money spent in institutional versus home care. And Oregon's 90-10, and most of the country is 95-5. So Oregon, to that extent, is a little bit ahead of the rest of the country in that they spend 10% in the community versus 5%. So I think that's a good measure of the progress. The other thing I want to mention is that when I first came into the business, I met Dick Ladd, and Dick and I were good friends. And I asked Dick, Dick, what you do? It's like the Willie Sutton question, you know. Dick, what you do before you got in here? How, here you are. We're down at. It was even before it was HICVA. It was SRS, and I said, Dick, what you do? We're all sitting around all these people. I went to Brandeis and these other kind of garbage places like that. So he said, I said, what's your profession? I'm a truck driver. Truck driver. I said, Dick, how do you know you're going to get this done? He said, I play poker with the governor. So that's So sometimes those charismatic leaders come out of strange places.